we started the hill and it was, I think, 21 kilometers. That's what I remember looking at my computer. And I kept pedaling and I think I just got lost in my thoughts at that point. I look down and it's 27 kilometers. I'm like, how long has this hill been? Or this computer? There's something wrong with it. So it turned out to be a 5 kilometer climb, 326 meter elevation. I had never done anything like it before.
This is The Medal Set.
Hi, this is Dawn, an ultra cyclist and sports PR specialist.
And I'm Afshan, an endurance athlete and journalist.
And we're on a quest to bring you stories of tenacity, courage, and mettle
from athletes in the Middle East and beyond.
A few weeks back, I had goosebumps seeing video of our guest today. In the video, she was braving the blazing afternoon heat on a traffic-filled highway in Riyadh to complete the cycling race in the first Saudi Games.
Why is that courageous, you ask? Well, 29-year-old Dara Sahag wasn't even a cyclist 3 months back. But she got a bike, set her CrossFit shoes aside, and threw herself into the deep end to prepare for one of the biggest sporting events for Saudi nationals in the kingdom. Proving that if there's a mountain to climb, stopping is not an option, literally.
Dara became part of a historic moment for the kingdom as it hosted its first Olympic-style sporting event, the Saudi Games, from October 27th to November 7th. Saudi nationals and residents of the country were invited to participate in more than 40 sports and use it as a platform to be discovered and potentially build their professional status. The Games are part of a key agenda within the kingdom's 2030 vision to diversify the economy and raise the quality of life of citizens.
So I've known Dara for a while now. And we've cycled together when she was training for this race in Dubai. But nothing could have prepared her for what the course threw at her on that day. The 35 degrees afternoon heat, the 5 kilometer climb that she had no clue about on the 57 kilometer race course, and the solo riding in highway traffic on a busy day. Even with the odds stacked against her, she endured and made it to the finish line without walking any part of it.
That's pretty epic for a first race. Any race, really. In our chat with Dara, she starts by telling us about her days growing up in Jeddah and playing football with her cousins. She talks us through how she came to participate in the Saudi Games and what the opportunity means for athletes like her, her friends, and the next generation in the kingdom. She also discusses how races can be organized for a safe and uplifting experience for all.
We've got so much respect for Dara's tenacity and achievements, and don't doubt you'll find this chat quite inspiring.
Dara, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you. You have had a huge few months that kind of all came to a head last weekend in a really historic moment for you and for Saudi Arabia. So first of all, we want to say congratulations for your participation as a cyclist. And we're going to talk about this in a little bit, because I feel like you're a girl after my own heart. You only took up cycling seriously like about 3 months back. Is that correct?
I think even less. Yeah,
like two. Wow. To actually participate in the Saudi Games. Yeah. Amazing.
And we'll get a little granular about the Saudi Games, and the opportunity it represents, not just for new cyclists like you or new athletes like you, but just kind of broadening the sporting ecosystem for Saudi, right? But before that, we want to get into a little bit about you and your sporting life, right? So take us back to growing up in Saudi. You grew up in Jeddah.
Yes.
So take us back to how it was growing up in Jeddah, and was sports a part of your life at all?
Yes, yeah. So sports has always been a part of my life since I was a little girl. So when I was 5, I'll say I always used to play football with all my cousins, the boys, who never wanted me to play with them. But I started playing sports since I was a little girl. Nothing too serious, I would say, when I was a little girl. I then took up Taekwondo. Well, actually, I got into it because my dad wanted my brother to do it. My brother went to 2 classes. He hated it. And I was like, I want to try it. And yeah, I continued doing Taekwondo until I got my black belt and all of that. At the same time, I also was playing basketball with a local team in Jeddah.
And what age was this?
So I started Taekwondo around 12, maybe 11 or 12. Basketball, just a couple years later. Actually, the team that played basketball wanted to play football, So they started a team. They wanted to start a team. My friend played basketball, so she asked me if I want to join the football team. So I played with them football, but then they stopped, like the football season finished, and they asked me if I want to join play basketball. So I played basketball since I was in middle school.
Right. And it seems like your family put a lot of emphasis on sports in general. Was your father in it as well? And
my dad, not so much. My mom always loved sports. So until now, my mom, she has like her days. She goes to the gym one day, spinning the other day.
Right.
She has a whole training schedule. So I think I get that passion for sports from my mom. But my parents always supported whatever I wanted to do. So out of my siblings, like my two older sisters, they weren't so much into sports, but I was always into it. So my parents always supported it. Now in Saudi at the time, like when I was growing up, there wasn't a big emphasis on it, especially for women. So mm-hmm. whatever opportunity we can find to play something, we always took that. So yeah, that's why I played basketball. We had a team. The coach is actually, you know, I know her since that time until now. She's the mom of one of my very close friends. And we had a basketball team. Like there were two basketball teams basically at the time. So we always used to play each other, play some schools, international schools. But that was about it. Like that was the limit to your, to any sporting endeavor.
Was it all organized by schools?
Yeah, like either schools or just informally, you know, just between teams. We have these courts, we rent the courts, mm-hmm. and we pay for it and we go and play.
You know, when you're a kid, you're playing basketball. I play basketball as well. I have so many parallels. Did you ever think, you know, back then that it could be something you could pursue as, you know, professionally or even to represent your country?
Yeah, this is where it gets a little tricky for me, and I think I can speak for many others, my generation. I always wanted to, like, I always had this dream, especially when I was younger, being like a professional athlete. And at the time, like, my first passion was always football, so I always wanted to be a football player. That was almost impossible, especially football. Like, I played basketball because I couldn't play football, because I grew up, I couldn't play football with the boys anymore, because I cannot be out in the public football pitches without my abaya. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't really play football with my cousins or with the boys. If they were going to somewhere private, they will tell me, okay, come. But otherwise, I couldn't even play that much. There were a few girls that play here and there, but it was just difficult. Like, you come to the realization that, no, you're not going to be a professional athlete. So yeah, I never really.
And when do you think that started changing in Saudi? When do you think women then could say, oh, maybe I can try this, maybe I can, you know, kind of push the boundaries a little? Or was the government doing something that allowed that to happen?
So all of this changed when His Royal Highness Mohammed bin Salman introduced Vision 2030. So I would say 2015, 2016. That's when things like vividly started to change. Because before that, no one stopped us from doing anything, but the opportunity was just not there. It just didn't exist. Now, this is not to say that there weren't amazing Saudi athletes, and we can see that from the Saudi Games now. Like, this week has just been a showing of amazing talent all over. Like, you know, a lot of women who never stopped playing their sport, whatever it is. So, you know, some actually continued to play, whether in Saudi or traveled and continued pursuing whatever sport they wanted to play, now had the chance to showcase all of this talent. And that was the whole purpose of the Saudi Games.
So tell us a little bit about the Vision 2030, right? Like, how is it supporting and what is the mission in that area with Vision 2030?
Yeah. So Vision 2030 is, you know, a comprehensive plan to basically change the country. It starts obviously, and the biggest driver is economic diversification, to move away from oil or reliance on oil into other sources of income for the country. But other than that, the vision has other programs. And one of these programs is, they call it the quality of life program. And it encompasses everything that has to do with really improving the quality of life in Saudi and for Saudis. So this starts from having entertainment, sports, anything that really would contribute to your quality of life as an individual on a day-to-day basis in Saudi. So it starts from, you know, simple things such as building a park. It was never a thing. Having a running track, a public running track, or a cycling track, for example. So all of these things, it starts from this is the baseline.
Yeah, the bare minimum.
Yeah. And then, it grows into or branches out into all these specific areas. So, for example, if you look at entertainment, it branches out into the General Entertainment Authority that not only caters to domestic stuff, but like international events, concerts, big, events on an international scale. And tourism, obviously, not just domestic tourism, but also international tourism. Also sports. Mm-hmm. So sports, you start from, what they call on the grassroots level, just building parks, having small activities for people to encourage them to just play a sport, be active, all the way up to the Olympic Committee or the Ministry of Sports, where you actually want to develop international level athletes to represent the kingdom in international competitions. And you would have, basically what the government is doing is giving, unfettered support to all of these initiatives. Like if you are an athlete or an aspiring athlete, you have all the support you want to actually pursue this.
Which is sport. Amazing. when you think about it, it's like going from kind of walking to like sprinting. Yes. Really. And I think we've seen a lot, I've only been to Saudi for the first time last year and was blown away just by the experience. Like it was amazing from history, and Jeddah is such a cool city. And just, it was really exciting. Like you mentioned some of the international sporting events. And I think, since 2018, from an outsider's point of view, we've really seen kind of things develop and announcements. Yeah. And seeing WWE, Formula One, the Neon Beach Games recently, and what's happening there from a sporting perspective. But I think what's really exciting for us, yeah, and I'm sure for you as well, is seeing the development of Saudi talent, because you are a huge, huge country. Like there's so much potential there in terms of athletics, and with the Saudi Games, which was encouraging nationals like you to pick up a bike. Literally.
Yeah.
To participate.
Yeah. So we're itching to know everything about the Saudi Games, right? And yeah, I think it was held last weekend, October 27th.
It's still, still happening. Yeah.
Oh, right. And I think once this is released, it'll be over. So I think it ends on November 7th.
7th, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And tell us a little bit about it. So there were 40 sports that were within the Saudi Games.
So there were 45 sports, okay, and I believe 5 Paralympic sports as well.
Right.
And if I can just backtrack a little. So the Saudi Games, it started from what I think was the vision of His Royal Highness Princess Abdulaziz bin Turk Al Faisal, who's the Minister of Sports. He's also passionate about sports. I think he was a car racer, Formula One racer, I believe. So that explains the Formula One.
Yeah.
But he took it very personally, this whole mission of
building global building, Saudi talent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Talent and sports talent. And, he started from, for example, just sports federations. We, I think, have now, I believe, 97 sports federations. And before he took on the Ministry of Sports, I think it was about 30 or 40 sports. So he started the idea of really diversifying sports and, just scouting Saudi talents or Saudi talents in different sports all over. And now with the Saudi Games really had two missions. The first one is to display Saudi's capability of hosting sporting events. And the second...
On this scale.
Yeah, on this scale. Mm. And the second most more important one is to find talent that the government can really train, groom, sponsor to represent it outside the
internationally
kingdom.
Yeah.
And I think they got very close to achieving that in almost every sport. So there are some names that we know, some names that we didn't know, and have now the ability to actually pursue the sport that they chose more professionally.
And you're one of those names that has gone down in the history books as one of the participants of the first Saudi Games, right?
Yeah.
But you weren't a cyclist. I believe you were a CrossFitter.
I was.
Right? So you need to kind of tell us how that came about. Like, how did the Saudi Games come about for you? Like, how did you find out about it? And then why did you decide, I need to kind of jump into this as a cyclist? But I've never owned a road bike before.
So they announced the Saudi Games. They actually announced it back in January or maybe last year even, late last year. But then they decided to postpone the event. So they postponed it and they re-announced basically in early summer maybe. And at the time, like me and all of my friends, all of my CrossFitter friends, my Saudi CrossFitters, we all wanted to participate. Obviously, CrossFit is not it's not an Olympic sport, let it be known. But yeah, everyone wanted to just take part in some, you know, shape or form. And so all of my friends were like looking into different sports. And at the time, I had already owned a road bike for maybe 3 months.
So you're like, done, bike, I got it.
I had a bike for like 3 months. Okay. You know, I had ridden in Al Qudra maybe 4 times. So I was like, okay, I can be a cyclist.
I love this. Love it.
Well, if you put your mind and heart to it, you can be anything.
I mean, I want you to explain everything around that, but just as an aside, who else out of the CrossFit friends went and what sport did they choose? I want to know.
So one of my good friends actually did rowing. So they had, instead of actual rowing, like in water, they had indoor rowing.
Okay. Mm.
So a 2K row test, which is, I don't know if you've done a 2K row before. It's brutal. It's one of the worst things you'll ever do.
I haven't, but I did see the videos out of the Saudi Games and everyone was on the floor at the end of it. So
yeah, 2K rows are very prevalent in the CrossFit community or in the CrossFit scene.
So that made sense.
Yeah. But, you know, for you to actually have a decent 2K row, your height obviously really helps. You know, your size can help. So I was like, you know, this is... I'm not gonna go in there and kill myself. You know, my biology is not really gonna help. Yeah, so one of my friends did.
So that's
rowing.
Off the list.
There was weightlifting, which was actually a potential sport that I really wanted to do. The weight classes just weren't. I wasn't here or there.
Mm-hmm. That's off the list.
We didn't have enough time to lose weight. Yeah. At the time, I was cycling just a little bit, just for fun, and I enjoyed it. So I was like, you know, just long distance cycling, that's easy, nice.
So yeah, didn't meet the weight kind of ranges for weightlifting, but cycling, you were like, I've got the bike, I've been a couple of times,
I know how to clip in.
So I'm gonna be a cyclist. So talk us through, when was that, like what time frame wise, how long before the games?
I think that was July. So July they just announced it. I think I signed up early August maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, this was open to only Saudi nationals?
It depended on the sport.
Right.
So obviously all sports are open to nationals. For cycling, for example, residents were also allowed. And in other sports, most sports actually, residents were allowed. In basketball, for example, I know that from my sister, only foreigners or residents who were born in Saudi.
Right.
So
people have grown up there.
Yeah, so it wasn't open for everyone. But yeah, generally it was Saudis and residents. So yeah, I registered early August.
So it's 3 months.
Yes.
You had training. So talk us through. Like, I love this because I'm like, my experience going from zero to ultra, your experience from like zero to Saudi Games. 3 months. Talk us through what the training looked like.
So early August, it was obviously summer. I had a few summer plans. So I was actually traveling a lot. And I messaged Carmen, my coach, my poor coach. She just has to endure through every. So I messaged her, told her, oh, I'll do cycling. She was like, oh, great. I started just cycling, just riding the bike. And end of August, or actually early September, they held qualifiers. So for most sports, you had to do a qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say, I remember that weekend before your qualifiers, we were sitting in a cafe and you were talking about it and you're like, yeah, I think I have a shot, you know, because we're all newbies. I think a lot of us are newbies, so I definitely have a shot. And you had come back from one of your longest rides in Kudra, and you did really well that day after. Yeah. So you were already in that mindset. So I remember this.
So I did the qualifier. I qualified. It was a 40K like a time trial, but not a time trial.
In Riyadh?
In Riyadh, yeah. It was at 7 a.m. Good time. So, yeah, I did the qualifier. I qualified. And then after I came back from the qualifier, and we knew at the time that the games are going to be 29 October or 27 October to 7 November, I decided, okay, I'm going to go, you know, full on cyclist now. So I enlisted the help of another coach, Rob Foster, Afshan's coach. And I just, you know, put my head down. And so that was mid-September, I think, mid-September. And told Rob, we have 6 weeks to turn me into a real cyclist. And you know what? Rob did an amazing job. Rob, you know, he threw me into the deep end. And yeah, it was...
You showed up for everything, and which is why...
All green on your training
green,
page.
All green. All green.
Green or yellow with the, you know...
Too much. Amazing. So the lead up to the race, what was communications like from the racing? So you... I mean, we had a quick chat before. The race was managed by the Cycling Federation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk us through kind of, you know, the lead up. You have all the fitness stuff is ready. How are you kind of preparing otherwise for this event?
Yeah, so the lead up to the event, you know, from a logistics perspective was not that easy. Training for it was easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think when you're organizing something on such a big scale for the first time, you are destined to have some, you know, it's trial and error. And with the Saudi Games, what they did, Saudi Games was the umbrella. And under that, for each sport, the federation for that sport will organize the race or the competition for that sport. So for my race, it was the Cycling Federation. And, you know, some federations were really on top of it. Some could do better.
Is the Cycling Federation fairly new or has it been around for a while?
I think it is new. I mean, I do not have so much background on when it was established. But it is kind of new because you also don't see the sport, what they call activated with different professional clubs. Mm-hmm. So it is only activated with specific clubs. But yeah, so in the lead up to the event was a little difficult. And I'll speak about my experience, but I know also a few of my friends in other sports also struggled a little. It was just the communication was difficult. It was difficult to get information to really know some of the details about the race. I mean, you both are racers and athletes, and you know when you have a race probably a year in advance and you train for it. I didn't know the date of my race until 1 week before my race. So I was just training for end of October.
Mm-hmm. Someday around that time.
Yes, yeah. Someday around that time. And I also did not know the race course, which is... I think, you know,
essential,
yeah, crucial to a cycling race. So the communication was difficult from my experience, because what happened was I would communicate with Saudi Games to get information, but Saudi Games would tell you to communicate with your federation, mm-hmm. whatever the respective federation that is organizing your sport. And the Cycling Federation was not really responding. At some point, I was actually asked to liaise with the club that I'm under, and I had no club reach out to me. I was theoretically registered under a club with the qualifier, but there was no communication after that. You know, turns out there was basically...
Because that was one of the prerequisites for doing the race. You had to be a part of a club.
Yes. So for almost every athlete in every sport, once you register for the Saudi Games, the federation would put you, allocate you to a club, basically. And I think they just wanted to do that just to gather information gathering perspective, or to make it more official and to basically, I think, make it more Olympic style games. So
yeah,
they would tell you know, like Al Ahli club, for example, racked up this many medals, Tihad club racked up this many medals, stuff like that. So yeah, each player was allocated to a club. Obviously, this applies only to amateurs, because professionals already were with clubs who already played whatever sport they were playing. So yeah, what happened for me is apparently there was a miscommunication. The club didn't, you know, never reached out to me because they never had my contacts. So yeah, this was like 6 days before the race that I wasn't even sure I was going to race, I managed to get a hold of the club through my dad calling his friends. And, you know, I got through this logistical hassle. I found out what the race course was about 4 days before the race, but still no idea of like the geography of the race.
Right. The elevation profile and things like that.
Yeah, nothing. I just knew, you know, the starting point and the end point.
I think that's testament to your mental strength. Yeah. Because that would derail a lot of people, right? Like not having all those unknowns ahead of you. But I think, yeah,
CrossFit prepares you for that.
And again, when you did see the start and the end point, you said that it seems like a really good course, but we'll talk about what the actual course was moving forward. But you've crossed all these hurdles, right? You're now traveling to get to the race on October 27th. Take us to the start line. What are you feeling? You know, I think back here, everyone who knows you was like, they were so anxious for you because they knew this was your first race. Yeah. But what was
your first race? And it was the Saudi Games. Yeah. I love it.
So tell us what was running through your head.
Yeah. So I, of course, was also very anxious. And yeah, I mean, I went in just trusting everything that I've done. And I obviously went in with the mindset that, you know, mentally, I will give it everything. Like there is no giving up. And, you know, the goal was just, you know, one goal for me. I obviously didn't go in expecting to win my first ever race, but I went in and I said, I'll ride with the group. The goal is to ride with the group. And this is actually a lot of what I practiced with Rob in the lead up. So we get to the start line and the race was starting at 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon. That was one of the already, you know, big surprises that we had also found out a week before the race. So 1:30 p.m. in Riyadh, which for anyone who doesn't live in the Middle East is
toasty.
Toasty is a good way to describe it. So the race was 1:30 p.m. to 4:15. That was the time domain that was given to everyone. It was a 57 kilometer.
So there was a course. Time cap.
There was a time cap. Yeah, we get to the start line and they do a little tweak on the time cap and they say as soon as 10 people finish, everyone else is time capped.
And what was the time cap then? It would be based on their time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as soon as 10 people finish, everyone else will basically not count as if they finished. Okay. Even if you had finished the race.
All right.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
So it was 1:30, get to the start line and they said, you're going to go straight and then you're going to go right and then you're going to get to the Gedia climb. So the area, that's where, I don't know if you heard about Gedia. Gedia is one of the giga projects in Saudi, and it's basically like the entertainment city they're going to build outside of Riyadh. So that climb was around that site. So they call it the Gedia climb. So you're going to get to the climb, go straight. And then right, like, and obviously for me, I wasn't hearing any of that. It was just, I'm going to wait for someone to tell me to turn right or left. So we start, and that was the first 20K. It was easy. It was okay. Riding with the group as planned. And then I look up front and I see what vividly looks like a mountain. It is a mountain in front of me.
Not a hill.
Nope, not a hill. If you ride in Al Qudra, it's not, it's that hill times maybe 20.
Had you done any riding, sorry to cut you off, had you done any riding here like at Jebel Jais or Hafid or anything before? No.
Okay. No. So actually a few weeks back, the Interfight Endurance people, they went to Jebel Jais for a training camp. And Carmen told me you should go.
You were like, nah, I don't need to.
No. I don't need to go up the mountain. I just need to be fast on the road. That reminds me.
You live
always
and learn.
Listen to my coach. You
live and learn.
So yeah, I look in front of me and it's a massive, massive climb. Like, okay, so that's what they meant by Gedia climb. I start going up the hill with the group. That's when everyone started separating from one another. I wasn't seeing anyone behind me, but I learned later many actually just stopped as soon as they started going up the hill or even before. So yeah, I started just going up the hill, and at that time the girls in the front were starting to just make a leap in front of me, and I was just pushing and pushing and pushing, not knowing how long this hill is. I don't know anything, but I kept moving, I kept pedaling. And at that time, I remember just, you know, my conversation with myself was just, you know, adjust expectations, finish this hill, don't stop, and then think of the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I kept telling myself. And I kept pedaling, and we started the hill, and it was, I think, 21 kilometers. That's what I remember looking at my computer. And I kept pedaling, and I think I just got lost in my thoughts at that point. I looked down, and it's 27 kilometers. I'm like, how long has this hill been? Or this computer is broken. There's something wrong with it. So turned out to be a 5 kilometer climb. I saw my Garmin after. It was 326 meter elevation. I had never done anything like it before. So obviously this was not
first race, first climb.
Yeah, I mean, 5K to anyone who hasn't climbed may seem like an only, but
no.
Get onto a hill of that nature or a mountain, as you've put it, and you will realize that time is just extended.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
2 hours in your head.
To put it in perspective, I, you know, we usually do a 5K, you know, between 8 and 9 minutes on a bike. This took me, and I can't tell exactly how long the whole thing is, but when I see the laps on my Garmin, I think I was there for close to 40 minutes,
mm-hmm.
just on that 5K.
Yeah.
So I kept going on that climb and, you know, not knowing when is it going to finish, not knowing how long it was. As soon as I saw just a little bit of a, not flat, but just less steep climb, I knew I could just breathe for a second. Because when I was going up the hill, I was just thinking, I can't stop, because if I stop, I'm going to get off my bike, and I can't get off my bike.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I got up there, I unclipped for a second, and I was about to faint. I overheated. And yeah, I think my body was just going into shutdown. A team car just randomly saw me, and he gave me some water. I just put it over my head.
And we're also talking about a temperature of what? 30, 40 degrees
high
at that
30s,
time?
I think. High 30s. I think high 30s, maybe close to 40. Yeah.
And the midday sun.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. Midday sun, yeah.
It was, you know, sun was very vertical. So I put some water on my head, and, you know, at that time I was like, okay, maybe I can just pick up some speed now. And I started pedaling, and I couldn't see anyone. So when I was going up the hill, I could see one girl who was standing, and there was an ambulance in front of her. But then when I finished the climb, she was riding just past me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only person I've seen. And I continued going just past the hill. And by that time, it was, you know, tailwind. Obviously, it wasn't too downhill, but I think it was just we're going downhill gradually. So it was just, you know, fast riding. But at that time, I was just crushed. And then all of a sudden, I hear someone yelling, "You can do it!" She's like, "You passed some people. There are many people behind. Go, go, go!" And then I look, and it's my sister.
Oh,
that's so awesome!
So my sister was in the passenger seat. My other sister was driving, and then my niece's nephew.
So you had like a whole cheer squad, a mobile cheer squad.
So
were they following you? They had followed you from the start line.
What happened was, we start the race. There are some cars behind us, but when everyone separated, the cars went, and the roads were not closed. So we were riding with the cars in the highway. And
wow.
That's when my sister, so what happened, and my sisters told me after that, so they were in the back behind all the, you know, the cars that were with the race. But then when they saw everyone like DNFing and everything, my sister was like, "We got worried because we can't see you. We don't know where you are, and we're going to find you." So, yeah, my family is the, you know, number one cheer squad. So my sisters found me. They kept riding with me the whole time. Basically, they were just fending off traffic. There was one other security car that was behind me. So that car and my sisters basically agreed how they're going to guard me.
Yes.
So my sister was had her window open, yelling at trucks like, "No, no, go right, go left."
I love it.
And they went with me the whole time. So it was my sister's security car, and that's also when the coach's car with Carmen came. And they were riding next to me. And yeah, so I just continued and finished the race.
One of the questions I have, because this is your first race, like unbelievable. You started with the strategy to stay with the group. Obviously, you know, you had to change tack when it came to this climb. Had you anticipated making kind of changes on the fly? Where did that come from? Because one of the questions I get a lot is about mental strength, you know, in terms of racing and, you know, with ultras, just a million things can happen. You're constantly changing tack. So had you thought about that beforehand? Like what could have possibly happened with scenarios? I guess you didn't really know, right? Because you didn't have some of the information. So yeah, just kind of talk us through how that thought process.
Yeah, so I definitely did not expect what actually happened to happen. So to me, I went in with the strategy of, you know, I will hold on with the group, you know, as much as I can and do everything that I basically learned in training in terms of like either speeding up or attacks or reacting to attacks or all these things. I'll do everything I can to stay with them. But obviously when the race started and when I got to this climb that I didn't even know how long it was, I adjusted my expectations. But when you're talking about, you know, mental strength or just the mindset that you go in with, you know, to me, there was never a point in that race, even when I was overheated and almost going to pass out, there was never a point that I thought, okay, I'm just going to stop. I'm not going to finish the race. And I think that's how I kept going. I just thought, you know, you came in to finish a race, we're going to finish the race. You know, come hell or high water.
Yeah. But while you were on the course, is there any point which kind of renewed your faith in what you were doing?
When I saw my sister, I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this race.
That's amazing.
Because I started riding alone and I was like, okay, we're going to keep going until, I don't know, because I can't see anyone around me. I can't see what's happening. I don't know where I'm going.
Right. So there were no markers to guide you?
No. So there were people every, you know, I think where you have to turn with flags to tell you. But when I came down, there wasn't anything. I was looking for a car, like one of the security cars,
right,
to know where to go.
Yeah.
Because there were different exits. And when we started, we were taking exits, but I was following the group. So I didn't have to look if there were any signs. So yeah, I was at some point, I didn't know if I was even going in the right direction. And I was looking for someone and I found a security car and I was like, should I go straight or right? He's like, keep going, keep going. So yeah, it was a little confusing at times.
So you made it to the finish line, right?
I did make it to the finish line.
How long did it take for you to finish that race?
So it was the longest it ever took me to do 57 kilometers, obviously. It took me 2 hours, 7 minutes.
Right. And overall, how would you assess your first ever race and your first ever Saudi Games?
It's an experience that I'm definitely happy I went through. And of course, I'll say frustrated with some aspects of it. But in hindsight, I think I got a lot more out of it than I would have thought. The cycling was never in my periphery. I discovered that I love it. I actually like it so much. I got to know you guys, which is one of the best things that happened to me, actually, just getting to do with the community. And I don't know, it also kind of like lit this spark or fire in me to come back and not be as surprised by a climb next time.
So we're going to see you at a Jebel Jais next weekend.
100%.
You and I will go. All three of us, really, when you're back from your marathon. You know, you speak personally about what it meant to you. What significance? Because like, this is a big deal. The first Saudi Games, you participated in it. What does that hold for you as someone being, you're one of the first women to compete in these games. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it holds great value. Yeah. I mean, it's always nice to see all the things that, you know, Saudi is doing. And it really means a lot to me personally. Like, I take all of my country's achievements and developments as really my own. I think we all do as Saudis. Like, there is a huge sense of belonging to the country. Obviously, and this is, it comes easier when you also feel like the country is doing so much just for you. Like, the Crown Prince is, you know, he's from our generation. So a lot of the changes happened when they first happened. We all felt like it was just, you know, he's just expressing our feelings, what we all wanted for the country. So it's nice. It's nice to feel like, you know, the country is doing so much for us. And, you know, Saudis also feel like they want to do that as well for the country. And it was very special.
And do you think a few athletes were identified through these games to kind of hone further for an international sporting event? And just talk about you as well. Like, were you approached after the games for any new opportunity?
Yeah, so for many athletes, you know, I can tell, for example, one of the girls I know who used to do CrossFit, and she went into weightlifting, and she just dedicated her entire, like, I think year and a half or something, to weightlifting, and she got a gold medal. So she won R1 million.
Wow.
Amazing. Because that was the prize money for every sport.
What is it? It's residence again, right? Yeah. I'm like, what could I do? Nothing, Dawn, nothing.
Yeah, so it's her first ever, let's say, big weightlifting competition, but obviously now this is going to set the stage for her to do more competitions for the kingdom in the name of Saudi internationally. So, and I think this is something that obviously she wanted to do, and it's easy. She doesn't have to, that was the whole point of the Saudi games. Like, we're giving you a platform to showcase yourself. Come, show us what you got, and we're going to do the rest. So yeah, for me personally as well, after I finished the race, someone contacted me. She wasn't in the race, but she's very active in the cycling community, Saudi cycling community. She was very impressed that I finished this climb. Apparently, it's an infamous climb that no one likes to do, obviously. But she was like, oh, it's amazing that you did it and you finished it. And obviously, because I also didn't know about it. So yeah, she was like, yeah, it was great. Are you interested in cycling for a club? I was like, I don't know. So she was like, because all of these clubs are looking. And at that time, I started getting like these different Instagram requests from, like, you know, coach of X club, Y club.
That's amazing.
So I was like, yeah, I mean, if I'm going to cycle for a club, it has to be only one club. Because we only, you know, we obviously root for a certain club in Saudi. So she was like, okay, done. 10 minutes later, I get a call from this club. It's like, we want to start cycling in this club, because they don't have a cycling team. They don't have anything.
So now you're heading it up.
The first and founding member.
Yeah. So he was like, yeah, we need women. They're recruiting men, youth, and then women as well. So he was like, do you want to cycle for us? I was like, yeah, okay. All right, great.
Done.
So yeah, we'll see what that brings in the future. But,
well, I guess there's going to be a lot more events now happening in Saudi and, you know, elsewhere in the GCC. I know a lot of teams travel kind of within the GCC to compete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I just need to cycle a little more.
Yeah. So cycling, we know, I think you'll be fine. But so cycling, we've got covered. Is there anything else on the cards for you? I feel like maybe in 3 months there might be, who knows, what you might be doing.
Running.
Ultra cycling.
Yeah. I mean, cycling, I never thought I'd be doing a cycling race. Like, if you'd asked me earlier this year, I would have laughed. Honestly, cycling, I took it on because I enjoyed it. Honestly,
I think we all share that commonly at this table.
And yeah, I think with time I found also, you know, the challenges in cycling racing, I guess, suited me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's funny, actually, my family, after the race, they were like, Dada, why did you choose the most difficult sport?
What would they suggest? What's easier? I want to know.
Yeah.
Not that cycling's easy, but like, I want to know what they would suggest.
Like, they were like, you know, you could have just done like a triathlon. I'm like, I'm not a triathlete.
How is that easier?
Doesn't seem easier to me.
No, actually, in the Saudi Games, the triathlon was, you know, the course was easier, obviously. But I told them, you know, if you want to compete anywhere, it's never going to be easy. But for them, you know, the fact that I was in traffic with cars at 1:30 p.m.
Yeah.
They were like,
it was more
you chose the sport with the most difficult conditions. Yeah. Like, why couldn't you do something indoors or in the morning?
I think cycling, especially in a peloton, is considered slightly more dangerous than some of the more individualistic sports. So I guess that's what they were getting at. Yeah.
But then my family, my dad was like, but that's Dado. She likes the difficult things.
Your dad knew you.
So these were the first Saudi Games, right? You have to anticipate issues, growing pains, kinks that I guess eventually once, if they hold this annually, they will start to iron out, right?
Yes.
What lessons do you think can be learned from the inaugural games that organizers can then take forward and like also learn from like games or challenges that are organized in other parts of the world?
Yeah.
What can be learned and what can be taken forward to make the athlete's life a little more easier as well as more pleasurable to participate?
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing is just planning early. Like there's this, say, theme within Saudi, across sectors really, to, you know, because of the enthusiasm and like affecting change, there's a lot of, you know, ideas and thoughts and initiatives happening. But sometimes these come either without like a full plan or, you know, an execution strategy, or, you know, sometimes they're kind of rushed. You know, the Saudi Games were announced maybe in the summer. I think a lot of people already knew it was going to come or something like that. But I think generally from an athlete perspective, and I think you will agree, it's just knowing something early and planning for it. Is always easier. Other than that, I think it's just going to take experience. You have to go through it to actually learn from the mistakes.
Yeah. I think I can speak for the both of us. You have shown an immense amount of grit, right? Right from, you know, starting 3 months back to going into a race where you had no idea what you were getting into. So this is a question that we ask all our guests, and you've shown plenty of it, right? Grit. Do you think it is innate or do you think it can be learned?
It can be learned 100%. I just want to go back to your question because I didn't answer it.
Oh.
What's coming the next 3 months or, or so? No, I'm still going to continue cycling, but back to playing some CrossFit now.
Mm-hmm.
So just play some fitness.
Any competitions on the cards there?
Hopefully in Saudi again in January. Just a team competition. It's fun, but it's also nice to just have a goal to just work towards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much that person.
Love a deadline. I love a deadline. Give me a deadline. Closer, the better.
Well, yeah. Yes.
I mean, you definitely proved that you can definitely achieve.
Dara loves a deadline too.
Yeah, I'm under a lawyer, pressure. So we deal with them all the time.
Under pressure all the time. That's when your true colors shine, right?
Yes.
Well, we're super proud of what you've achieved.
Yes,
Dara.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us about your foray into cycling and the first Saudi Games.
We'll have Dara on again next year when there's some other new sport that she's competed on internationally.
Thank you so much for listening today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, we ask that you please share it with family, teammates, friends,
and even frenemies, or share via social media. Please also leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. 5 stars only.
And visit us on themedalset.com for more stories and resources.
Thanks again for listening.
Your support means the world to us.
This is The Medal Set.